Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Coming up, as you finish shopping for those last-minute gifts, the Problem Gambling Network of Ohio has a warning about certain gifts for kids. Consumers are on the lookout for possible credit card fraud during this busy time of the year, and our Jay Fox will speak with an expert about it. He'll also talk with someone about no-contact holidays, and he'll share a way the little ones in your family can talk to Santa. Plus, Doug Petcash of Face the State will have a look at state politics. First up, on Columbus Perspective, holidays are a time for fun and games, but Ohio for Responsible Gambling wants parents, family members, and friends to know many gifts on a child's holiday wish list could have some unexpected consequences down the road. With us today is Derek Longmire with the Problem Gambling Network of Ohio. Hi, Derek. Thanks for joining us on Columbus Perspective.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me, what is it about gifts like lottery tickets and video games with loot boxes that we should really should have some pause about when thinking about giving those to children?
Well, it certainly, as we look at gambling products such as lottery tickets, and we'll talk more about the loot box elements. Those are gambling products, and those are intended for those who are of the legal age to participate. And we know that, especially for lottery products, those are who are under 18 aren't legally able to participate.
When we're looking at gift options for kids, like these sort of loot boxes, which I admit that's a new term for me. What does that mean?
If you look at many video games, it's kind of a shift from the olden model where you spend $50 on a game and then that game is yours to what they call now freemium games, where the game itself is available for free and then you can purchase these premium or additional things. Some of those elements that you're purchasing are known, and others, like loot boxes, would be virtual or digital crates that you might receive where you're paying your 99 cents, not really sure what that 99 cents will get you, and then until you open up the crate and see what it is. So really, as we look at what those loot boxes are and see how closely they relate to gambling, they in the brain trigger very similar to what we'd see as more traditional gambling products.
I see. Derek, can you tell us a little more about PGNO's Change the Game campaign and the Youth Gambling Prevention Guide that you offer?
Yes, through our website, changethegameohio.org, the focus really is to make sure that we're understanding what the impact of gaming and gambling is on youth. And there's resources available for the youth themselves, as well as educators and their parents to again, really understand what that impact is and that we're all making healthy decisions for our young people.
And where can we find those resources? I imagine they're online.
Yes, changethegameohio.org is a place to go. And then you can also visit, specific to this time of year, changethegameohio.org/gifting.
Excellent. Derek Longmire is the executive director of the Problem Gambling Network of Ohio. And we're talking about holiday gifting, specifically for young people, children, those under the legal age to gamble. We're talking about that scratch-off lottery ticket you might throw in the stocking, or these video games we're learning about that have loot boxes, which can lead kids into some thought patterns, behaviors that might not be so healthy. Derek, are there actual studies showing kids being exposed to gambling at an early age that could lead to a problem later in life?
There are. We know the earlier initiation young people have to gambling, and frankly, the science is the same for gambling, substances, alcohol, et cetera. But we know that the early initiation, the higher the likelihood that they're going to develop problems later in life. And we also know that in addition to just kind of that early initiation stage, there's also kind of the big win that those young people might receive. So say they do get that lottery ticket as a 12-year-old and they win $100. Well, $100 might not be considered a huge win to adults, but for someone that doesn't have a lot of income, that could be. And then that really sets that bar or kind of that dopamine rush that young person then later in life would want to seek and continue to feel that same thing. So those are both risk factors that we see.
I don't know about you, but $100 on a scratcher would excite me right now, too.
Oh, what?
I know what you mean, though, and not to make light, because this is certainly really important. And on that note, what, Derek, are some warning signs that parents should be on the lookout for if they think their child might have an unhealthy approach to gambling and those types of things?
Well, the biggest tip is really being a good listener. And if your child is talking about a particular video game, then explore more. What elements do they like about it? How do they get engaged? How do they pay for it? Are there costs associated with that? So that's certainly one element, and just being engaged with that. The other is really being mindful of limit setting in both dollars spent as well as time spent. So we know that as we look at some of these games, you can spend a lot of time there, and then that's taking away from your time to spend on other activities. And then with the dollar element, certainly your child has limited resources, we would expect, but also then doing due diligence and making sure that you're looking at your own credit card statement. So as we know that many of these games are attached to their parents' credit cards, and those 99 cents may not resonate right away if you don't pay attention to those statements, but those 99 cents at a time can really add up as well.
Absolutely. And we've all heard those stories about parents that suddenly look at the account and say, whoa, what happened? My kid was just playing a game and now there's hundreds of dollars here. It can happen quickly. I know I've played games on my phone and without realizing have nearly spent money. It's very easy to do on some of these games. Derek, do you have any final thoughts that we haven't touched on before we finish up today?
Well, we talked about our website, changethegameohio.org, but we also have a corresponding helpline, the Ohio Problem Gambling Helpline, and that is for really anyone, whether that would be an individual that is experiencing gambling problems or their loved ones. And that number is 800-589-9966, and specialists are available 24/7 to provide help and hope.
Derek Longmire, Executive Director of the Problem Gambling Network of Ohio. We always learn so much when you visit Columbus Perspective, and I thank you and wish you very happy holidays and a happy new year.
You as well. Thanks so much.
For more information about the dangers of youth gambling and to check out the Youth Gambling Prevention Guide, as Derek mentioned, visit changethegameohio.org/gifting or call the Ohio Problem Gambling Helpline at 1-800-589-9966.
The Fan. A majority of people here in Columbus are using credit cards for holiday shopping, with families increasingly relying on secure payment methods to manage their budgets and safeguard them against fraud. Richard Hunt, the executive chairman at the Electronic Payments Coalition, joins us now on Columbus Perspective to talk about how consumers can protect themselves this holiday season and beyond. Welcome, Richard.
Hey, Jay. Thank you. Good day to you and all of your listeners.
With an increase in online shopping over the holidays, a lot of people are worried about data security, especially in the light of the troubles the city of Columbus had this year. What can we tell people to do to make sure they aren't victims of fraud or identity theft?
Yeah, first off, your credit card is safe and it is secure. And Iowa City is extremely convenient to use both for the merchant and the small business and the customer as well. We spend billions of dollars throughout the globe making sure your credit card is safe and secure. Many of the hacks that occur, Jay, you don't even know about because we stop it before it gets to the customer. Now, there are some things your viewers can do to help us out during the holidays. You can take a look at your account on a daily basis to make sure that everything is correct. You can set up alerts with your bank, such as Huntington Bank in Columbus, and to see transactions going in and out as well. Yes, we've had an 85% increase in data hacks or attempts over the past year, but we're doing a very good job making sure your data is safe and secure. There are some Grinches, no doubt about it, even in Ohio, who are trying to steal your data for Christmas, but we're going to be on guard to make sure that does not happen.
What do you say to people who argue, I'll just pay in cash and that'll save me the hassle?
Well, look, that's their choice to do. You can go either one. I will tell you, if you're a small business, it actually costs you more to process the payments in cash than it does a credit card, which was a big surprise to me. But look, we know we're safe and secure. And look, you have an added benefit by using your credit card, and that is using and getting rewards. A lot of people in Ohio use cash back. So once they make a purchase, they get a percent back, and they can use that to pay off grocery bills or gas bills during this holiday season. season. We all know how high gas prices are, and I'm sure a lot of Buckeye fans will be spending money at the grocery store this weekend to watch the Bucks play, and we want to help make sure they can at least afford their purchases.
Yeah, I'm going to need some antacids for this game. That's for sure.
Right.
Are they, when you think about the change in the administration, both in terms of Congress, not just nationally, but statewide, and obviously we have a new president coming in, are there any legislative threats to credit card rewards and fraud prevention measures, or are we good to go?
No, we're not good to go. We're always vigilant because there are a couple of politicians in Washington, D.C. who want to have what is a government takeover of your credit card. They will dictate how your credit card is processed and the transactions, how they're done. That would jeopardize the safety and security. It would also jeopardize all those miles that you've accumulated and points and rewards that you've accumulated. We've had some 3 million letters sent to Capitol Hill opposing the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandate bill. And if you go to our website, guardyourcard.com, you can join the effort to make sure this legislation does not pass.
Are we moving more towards Bitcoin, or is that still out there in the distance?
You know, I don't know, Jay, because I would tell you, if you look at the history of the world, when you look at disruptors, usually the disruptor is in existence for about 7 years, and then it just catches fire in the seventh or eighth year. And this is about the eighth year of so-called crypto and Bitcoin. So it's going to be very telling in the next 2 years the direction cryptocurrency goes with acceptance in this country.
Richard Hunt is the executive chairman at the Electronics Payment Coalition, and we thank you for helping to discuss how we can protect ourselves in the holidays and beyond. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
You're listening to Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's more from Jay Fox.
The holidays are supposed to be a joyous time of family bonding and togetherness. But too often the holidays become a source of stress and anxiety. Psychologist Dr. Christine Coral joins us now to discuss this issue. Welcome to Columbus Perspective.
Thank you so much for having me on today.
Showing up to holiday events is an expectation. What happens when people need to protect their mental health?
It's really hard. People are trying to balance taking care of themselves, but feel guilty about not showing up for family events, particularly if family is a big value for you. It can feel very difficult to say no or set limits on what you need over the holidays. So it's a lot of what I talk about with people this time of year.
To what degree does political, religious, and lifestyle choices impact stress during these holiday visits?
It can be really big, especially if people have very strong opinions, if their identities are caught up in those opinions, and if they feel like anyone disagrees with them, that they're saying that they're wrong. So sometimes, you know, if arguments, if you can't agree to disagree, or you know, I think, you know, one thing we've lost is really being able to talk about those subjects while still being respectful and kind to each other. And so sometimes it gets to be too much. And for families where there was a history of abuse before, or where things just aren't safe, it makes it even harder for a person to go into that environment.
COVID provided a respite for many people. I don't want to call it an excuse, but it was a valid reason not to do something. So how does, without COVID, how does one adopt a no-contact holiday policy without either offending other people or perhaps even potentially ostracizing themselves?
Yeah, sometimes you can normally take your family, but maybe this year you can't. Maybe work has been really rough. Maybe you're going through depression or having a really bad bout of anxiety, and your resilience isn't there either. So, you know, it's true that COVID did give people not only a good reason to stay home, but they saw how nice it could be, and it's very hard to go back. So I do go through with people different reasons that they could say. I never really recommend, I like keeping the door open if at all possible for reconciliation or getting to some sort of peace with your family. So not being direct about it, which can escalate things, often helps. So you can say, I'm just feeling really run down at work these days, and I can't deal with air travel. Blaming the airlines is always a good reason to, or not wanting to be in the middle of traffic or saying that you want a quiet Christmas this year. There still are colds and flus around, and maybe you're just recovering from one. I know where I am in the world, there's a lot of pneumonia actually going around at the local university, so kids are getting sick. So there's lots of reasons to think of that you can politely decline or decide tell people you're having a quiet holiday this year.
I think it's normal to want to experience joy and happiness, especially during the holidays. But how do you eliminate the toxicity, and still find ways to, you know, have that festive cheer?
Well, I think if it comes to political discussions, not taking the bait can be really helpful. Learning really good assertiveness skills, but not taking the bait. And so if somebody comes at you and calls you a name for your political beliefs, saying, oh, well, you know, we all are entitled to our opinion. And, you know, I hope things work out, you know, with our political leaders. It's often politics this time of year, sometimes religion, sometimes you know, just a disagreement on anything, how you cook the turkey, you know, can get out of hand in some families. So it's really important to decide, you know, do you want peace or do you want an argument? And what can you do to not take the bait? Some years that's really hard, you know, especially if someone's coming hard at you. I often tell people, like, if you wouldn't go into a situation where someone would punch you in the face or physically assault you, then you it's just as valid not to go into a situation where you're going to be emotionally assaulted if you feel you don't have the capacity for that. And so protecting yourself becomes really important. And it's often about these things that, you know, when it comes down to it, really don't matter. I hate to say that, but they really don't. You know, we have to learn how to get along with each other, but sometimes we need space, and that's okay.
Well, I'll tell you a cute story. I had a friend come home from a Thanksgiving visit to her family, and she came home with contusions on her right earlobe. And I said to her, I said, Nancy, what happened to your ear? And she said, well, we decided this year that anytime something came up at the dinner table that would be potentially upsetting, we would do the old Carol Burnett and pull on our earlobe. So she had a bruised ear, and that was the way they dealt with it. But unfortunately, it's awkward, and it causes sometimes even more trauma. You know, sometimes we go along to get along, and sometimes we just have to say no for our own sanity.
Yeah, or for the sanity of your partner or your children, if you're protecting your children. You know, say your kid is gay and you have someone homophobic there, you know, they're younger and they might not be able to protect themselves. So you may decide to protect them. So it's all about protection and self-preservation. You know, when I do work with people, I really do work with them to develop good assertiveness skills, learn to laugh things off, learn to, you know, push back, hopefully humorously, to be able. There was one time where I ran an anger management group for teenage boys. This was when I was back in grad school. And we ended the group by playing a game called Fool in the Ring. And all the other boys that got to know each other by the end of the group. And so one boy would stand in the middle and all the others would try and bait him and tease him. And you know, the boy in the middle would usually go, oh, good one. Oh, that's funny. And all the other kids on the outside would get frustrated that they couldn't goad the kid in the middle. So that's kind of what I try and do with people when you're in that kind of situation. If you're non-reactive, it can go a long way. You know, when I talk about going no contact with people, it's usually a very difficult decision, and usually because things have crossed a line where it's not safe or they don't have the capacity. You know, if you're going to go home and become suicidal, you absolutely can't go home.
That's correct.
For example.
We want to thank psychologist Dr. Christine Coral for joining us to talk about this issue and wish you a happy holiday, or holidays,
thank
plural,
you so
if you would. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
There are over 200,000 children here in Columbus. Now, that's only counting children under the age of 18. During the holidays, we are all children. So that's over 900,000 of us in the capital city. And we all want to know one thing. Are we on the naughty list or the nice list? And what's up with Santa this year? OnStar Assistant Marketing Manager Alexandra Rosander is with us on Columbus Perspective. And apparently you all have got some sort of special deal going on with the North Pole and Santa. What's going on?
Hi. Yes. So OnStar is extremely excited to present our 2024 Santa campaign this year. So we are helping children and parents all around the world follow Santa on his journey around the world. And it's easy to do. All you have to do if you have a GM vehicle is push that blue OnStar button and connect with an advisor, and they can give you updates on the big guy all the way up from the 16th of December to the 24th. So you can hear what Santa's up to in his preparations up to the 24th. And then on the 24th, you can get a live update on where he is on his journey. So that way you can be prepared when he's about to stop by your house.
Now, you have information from the North American Aerospace Defense Command, NORAD. And that's kind of how you know where the guy is, right?
That's absolutely correct. Yes, we have a partnership and we work with NORAD to help find Santa's location. We know that they know exactly where he is, and we have a great partnership with them. And they're awesome to work with and give us information so that way we can give accurate details to our customers on exactly where the whereabouts of where he is. So you can find all this information on our Guardian app as well. So there'll be real-time updates throughout the 24th. So you can kind of see where he's floating around on the map of the world and keep an eye on him that way as well.
So do I have to be an adult to push the blue button, or can anybody do it?
Anybody can do it. We know that a lot of times adults are the ones that are driving the vehicle and can reach the button, but anyone can push that button and talk to an advisor and get an update on Santa. We want to make this as broadly available as possible, so it's open to anybody and anybody who wants to use it.
Now, there's one thing that I think is really cool. As a kid, I can actually call Santa Claus and talk to him and find out which list I'm on, tell him what I want for Christmas, and hear a Christmas story. How'd you work that out?
That's right. Well, we got a connection with the big guy. So you can talk to Santa Claus yourself if you're interested and would like to. So we have a connection with our advisors. They can connect you directly to Santa Claus, and you can ask him a couple questions, and he might read you a nice story at the end. It's a fun way to connect with him and just make sure everything's all squared away and you're on the nice list before he comes.
Absolutely. So there is a charitable connection to all of this. You guys are working with the American Red Cross. How does that work this year?
Absolutely. So we've had a great partnership with the American Red Cross over the years. And we donate to the Red Cross every time someone pushes that blue button or uses our Guardian app to interact with our Santa experience. So for every button push, we will donate $1 to the American Red Cross for a maximum of donation of $30,000. So keep pushing that button, keep interacting with our app. And every time you do, there's a donation made to a great organization that helps so many people in need, especially after all the natural disasters that happened this past year. We know that all of this money is going to a good cause, and we're very excited to continue our partnership this year with the program.
Well, we thank OnStar for everything they're doing because, as the saying goes, Santa Claus is coming to town. For Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Now, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10TV, here's Doug Petcash from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10TV.
A whole new General Assembly begins in January. If bills don't make it through the House and Senate this coming week, the sponsors will have to start over in the new year. So there is a lot going on, and quickly, at the State House. We've been following the big issues, including one bill that's causing concern among the LGBTQ plus community. House Bill 8, known as the Parents' Bill of Rights, looks to change the way schools interact with parents. Critics of the bill say it targets LGBTQ plus youth, but those who support it say it's about parents being more involved in their child's education. The bill is focused on schools communicating more with parents when it comes to their child's physical and mental health. 10TV's Tara Jabor has both sides of the debate.
I'm going to call this meeting of the Senate Education Committee to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
House Bill 8, also known as the Parents' Bill of Rights, would make changes for all Ohio schools. First, it would make sure that sexuality content is age-appropriate and developmentally appropriate.
We wanted to make sure that the language in this was correct and, protected parents and schools.
The wording of sexuality content concerns some. Dwayne Stewart, the executive director of Equality Ohio, says this bill reminds him of the Don't Say Gay bill in Florida.
What ends up happening is just an immediate erasure of LGBTQ people, their families.
If passed, it would also notify parents of any change in student services like counseling or anything to do with physical or mental health. It would also require schools to tell parents if health care services are offered at the school. Stewart believes this could be dangerous for LGBTQ youth who confide in school professionals about their sexuality.
The teacher would have to inform a parent about a student's sexuality or gender identity, which is forced outing and will be dangerous, very dangerous for LGBTQ youth.
The legislation also mentions school staff should encourage students to not withhold anything from their parents. Senator Brenner says the changes made to this bill have been a lot but necessary.
We've had multiple hearings on this to make sure that the process is done right and correctly, and that there's plenty of input on the bill, and I think that's where we are. We're basically ready to go, I believe.
It's such a blatant First Amendment violation for both students and teachers. And this is what our legislature is choosing to spend their time on.
If it doesn't pass next week through both the Senate and House, then lawmakers will have to start over next year.
We will see what happens between now and next week.
Also included in that bill, a provision that would require school districts to allow students to go to off-campus Bible study during school hours. We'll keep track of this legislation and keep you updated on what happens with it next week. The Ohio House passed a bill allowing universities to pay a student athlete directly for name, image, and likeness. House Bill 660 passed unanimously and now moves to the Senate. Lawmakers say it will help Ohio universities compete in the new era of paying student athletes. When they introduced the bill back in August, the co-sponsors said it will allow universities, the nonprofit collectives that raise money to pay athletes, and the student athletes themselves to work directly together through the process of making a deal. They say it will also protect student athletes and erase gray areas when it comes to negotiating NIL deals. The Republican and Democratic leaders in the Ohio House say the bill will make sure Ohio universities have a level playing field with other schools across the country.
It's important for, our colleges, universities in Ohio and for our students to be able to be on the forefront of that and to make sure that we can be competitive.
Do you think it's a good thing for a university to be able to directly pay student athletes?
Well, I think that, in light of, I'm not going to get into the weeds of that, but I think that us having the ability to work within where we are going and where all states are going to have to go is a good thing.
Now, just last month, Governor Mike DeWine signed an executive order allowing Ohio universities to provide direct compensation to their student athletes for the use of their name, image, and likeness. Speaker Stevens said it's important the legislature make it a law. Right now, leaders are also waiting on final court approval of a settlement agreement between the NCAA and several athletic conferences that will allow schools to pay players. And just to be clear, the bill and the executive order prohibit universities from using fees or tuition paid by students or state tax money to pay student athletes. Again, the bill now goes to the Senate. It has to be passed by the end of the year, or lawmakers would have to start from scratch. Ohio lawmakers are debating whether to give themselves a bigger pay raise than they are currently set to receive. This would also include many other elected officials across the state. Republican State Representative Bill Seitz told me it's about keeping up with inflation.
Right now, elected officials are scheduled to get a 1.75% raise per year through 2028. The proposal would raise that to 5% each year for the next 4 years. Then for the next six, it would be the rate of inflation or 3%, whichever is lower. Why is this needed now?
We've had 4 or 5 years of rampant inflation. As anyone knows, prices are up somewhere between 20 and 30% over where they were pre-pandemic.
The proposal would not only apply to legislators, but also countywide elected officials, township trustees, judges, legislators, and statewide office holders. According to the state, legislators currently make just over $71,000 a year. Those in leadership positions, such as the Speaker of the House, make more. The governor, attorney general, and state Supreme Court justices earn roughly between $120,000 and $180,000. What do you say to those who would say, hey, I can't vote myself a raise? Why should you be able to do that?
Well, there's only one group that can vote the raise for the legislature, and that's the legislature. Okay? So it can't be done any other way.
Citizens we talk to are skeptical.
I feel like they already make enough, to be honest, and there's a lot of local residents who would love even just to make minimum wage.
The people that deserve to get a pay raise are the people that keep this beautiful hallowed hall clean.
Right now, discussions on the pay raise are still going on, and a bill has not yet been introduced. A lawmaker told me that could happen this week, but lawmakers would have to pass the bill this week or start over next year.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's more from Face the State, courtesy of 10TV.
Joining me to break down what lawmakers have been doing is University of Cincinnati political science professor David Nevin. David, thanks again for being here today.
My pleasure.
Well, first of all, what do you make of this raise proposal?
Well, you know, one hand, this is a group of folks who work part-time who are already being paid more than the average income of an Ohioan. You know, that's a fact. On the other hand, of course, as Representative Seitz said, yes, there's inflation, and, you know, inflation has been higher than their rate of pay. But, you know, it doesn't sound the most attractive thing to say to voters, you know, right before we head out the door, we're raising our pay.
And do you think that this will pass? I mean, they've had these discussions before in 2018. Mm-hmm. Governor Kasich even vetoed it, and then they overrode that.
You know, this is not so much a question of what they want to do. It's a question of what they have time to do. So, you know, if this issue doesn't pass, you know, in the remaining week or so, it's likely to come up again next session.
Come up again, okay. So far in the lame duck session, the Republican-dominated legislature has passed the so-called bathroom bill that requires students to use the bathroom or locker room of the gender assigned at birth. It now looks like the Parents' Bill of Rights that we talked about earlier in the show will pass as well. And then earlier this year, the law took effect that bans gender-affirming care for minors and also bans transgender athletes from competing in women's and girls' sports, in school sports. Why do you think there is such a focus on this type of legislation? Is this something that is just Ohio?
Well, this is an awful lot of legislating affecting an awfully small population of people. In that respect, it's extraordinary. This is really following a playbook we've seen in Florida and a handful of other states where Republicans have had, you know, supermajority control of the legislature and a supportive governor. And what's extraordinary about it is continuing to return to this question in what has otherwise been a very unproductive session of the legislature. This is a legislature that's historically passed far fewer bills than would be the norm. And an awful lot of those bills are focused on a very small handful of people.
Why do you think it's been so unproductive, or can you qualify that for me?
Well, you know, basically what you have here is you have total Republican control, but you have two different branches of Republican thought. And it's not so much that they disagree about what to do, they disagree about what to do first. And so there's been a bit of an ongoing feud between, you know, House Republicans and Senate Republicans, and, you know, bills relating to sexual orientation and sexual identity, one of the few things they've agreed on. And obviously that's been, you know, an ongoing theme here.
You talk about productivity overall over this
right.
Two two-year General Assembly being low. We get to these lame duck sessions, mm-hmm. and then it's just this flurry or frenzy right. of activity, if you will. Is that usually the case?
It is. It's almost always the case. You get to this lame duck session, and it's like one of those game shows where they set people loose in the supermarket. Anything they can grab in 2 minutes, they get to keep. That's what the legislature does. It just goes into a frenzy. There's no time for full hearings. There's no time for full debate. And one of their tactics is they tend to cram things into a bill. So they take separate ideas, put them into one bill.
They call them the Christmas tree
bills. They call them Christmas tree bills.
And decorate them,
yeah. And even the bill that you're already talking about that would require, you know, parents to be informed of everything relating to, sexual curriculum, you know, that bill includes a provision allowing release time for religious, you know, education, you know, in the same bill. It's a lot of different things going
now,
on.
You're, you know, very familiar with the state constitution, too. Does this run the risk, then, of, you know, violating that concept of one subject per bill, or is it because they're education related it can get by?
Well, the short answer is Ohio has, one of the very few clear provisions of the Ohio Constitution is a bill has to be about a single subject, one single subject. And that definition of single has been stretched and stretched and stretched, and it just keeps getting bigger. So we see an awful lot crammed into the concept of single subject.
When you see this happening so quickly, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. No time for a bunch of hearings and really digging into these bills, does it raise the risk of mistakes that would then have to be fixed in the next General mm-hmm. Assembly?
I mean, this happens all the time where they have to do, essentially a correction bill, a few weeks later when they realize some provision in the law had an unintended consequence. Mm-hmm. And, to give you an example, the religious release time would allow release time for any group that calls itself a religion. It doesn't specify, any standards of what those would be. So I could create a religion this afternoon and start pulling kids out of a school. So those kinds of things where they maybe haven't thought through all the implications of what they've done because they did them in such a hurry, they often come up again.
Let's look ahead a little bit. First of all, there's a change of power mm-hmm. coming up. Jason Stevens, the current Speaker of the House, did not run again for re-election to that position. Senate President Matt Huffman, whom we have a picture of to show people here, is moving from President of the Senate to Speaker of the House next year. How much different do you think things will be for the way things are put through in the House under his leadership?
Well, superficially, you'd say, well, this is Republican control. It's continuing Republican control. It shouldn't make that big of a difference. But it's actually going to make a tremendous difference because Huffman and Stevens did not see eye to eye. Even though they're both conservative Republicans, Stevens is a little bit more of an institutionalist, believes in things like infrastructure bills and so forth. Huffman was a harder push on all things culture. So the big difference is Huffman still runs one of the, bodies, but he has a very friendly now co-leader in the Senate. So he'll be in charge of the House. He leaves behind a legacy in the Senate, and essentially one of his lieutenants is taking over. So they are going to, march in lockstep going
and that
forward.
That being Senator Rob McCauley
right.
taking over on that side.
So, right.
we did see a lot of, kind of disagreement on legislation and what could be what maybe went through one chamber didn't go
right.
through the other. So you're seeing that won't be an issue this
right.
time.
Right. I mean, they are of one mind on priorities. And so this will be a really big sea change because ironically, what's happened in the last 2 years is Republicans have had so much power in Ohio that they've spent their time fighting with each other. And this, this really consolidates Huffman's ability to push a legislative agenda.
And do you expect under his leadership it to be more conservative, more moderate? How do you see that?
Well, it's already been conservative, but it'll be a bit more activist. That's the big difference. The agenda is not going to radically change. We're already talking about, sexual orientation, sexual identity bills. Those will keep coming, but it'll happen a lot faster and bigger. Huffman, his defining issues are all cultural conservative issues. Probably see a lot dealing with education from top to bottom, from elementary school to college.
What other issues do you see coming up in the next General Assembly, which starts in January?
Sure. I mean, in terms of categories of transformation, they're going to look at the tax code. They love the idea of cutting income taxes, which in Ohio effectively forces local governments to pay for more. So it's, there's no such thing as free lunch. There's no such thing as, free, police and schools and so forth. That will no doubt be a major thing. Another big issue to think about is Ohioans enshrined reproductive rights in the Constitution, but the legislature hasn't actually pushed any legislation forward consistent with the state constitution. That's going to be a big issue.
We hear a lot about property tax relief, too, but or housing affordability,
right, right.
And those two things and how they intersect. But nothing much has happened this session.
Nothing much has happened, and that's at cross purposes with their desire to lower income taxes. If you lower income taxes, you know, the hole that's created is almost, you know, inherently lower. Local governments having to pay, local governments rely on property tax.
And we'll be watching it, of course, closely here on 10 TV. Just in the minute and a half or so we have left, David, I wanted to get your thoughts on the Trump transition. Mm-hmm. He's been naming, you know, a lot of, you know, he named the key cabinet posts,
sure.
And now he's been naming the undersecretaries and the other positions in the administration. What do you make of how the administration is going out and going on so far in the transition,
sure.
In terms of, you know, tone, selection, and whatnot?
Well, a couple
and speed.
A couple of remarkable things. One is the degree to which, you know, he's raiding Fox News's personnel to fill, you know, his various positions. You know, people he's seen, you know, people he's seen on television, people who've said supportive things. Second is almost the desire to create controversy. You know, typically, you know, a president selects people, you know, who are of certain stature and who will make life easier in terms of getting Senate confirmation.
But they do have control of the Senate now, so we'll see how the confirmation.
They have control of the Senate, but they don't necessarily have 50 people who would rubber stamp anything.
Okay, we'll see how the confirmation hearings play out. David Niven, thank you so much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Again, that's Doug Petcash, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV, from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV. This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. Heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS FM 97.1 The Fan and on 1460 AM ESPN Columbus.